I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brandy's Female Podcast. What if a doctor could shape corporate strategy to make workplaces healthier and more equitable? In this episode, Dr. Talia Varley shares her unique career journey from practicing medicine to building a first-of-its-kind role at Cleveland Clinic Canada, where she leads corporate health strategies for some of North America's biggest companies. Talia reveals how businesses can reduce risk, improve employee well-being, and even boost innovation by addressing overlooked issues like menopause, mental health, and chronic conditions that especially impact women. She also shares her experience challenging inequities in medicine and why it's time for workplaces to rethink their approach to supporting women. If you think you've heard it all about workplace equity, think again. This episode is going to surprise you. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandysfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Dr. Varley, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female today. Thank you for making time to speak with me.
Oh, thanks so much for having me here today.
I typically start conversations with my guests on the show by asking them to kind of go back to, you know, childhood time and remember growing up. What kind of future were you imagining for yourself from a career standpoint? What were you picturing in terms of a future career? And was it at all connected to what you're actually doing now?
It is actually very connected to what I'm doing now. I grew up in a household where you had two choices for your career. You were either a lawyer or a doctor. And my brother became a lawyer. So as the younger sibling, doctor was left on the table. And certainly that's the career path that I ended up very fortunate to be able to pursue.
And were your parents physicians as well? Or where did, you know, their interest in having kids studying medicine come from?
Yeah, lots of family members, family friends in medicine. My mother was a pharmacist, and then my father was in accounting on the finance side. So I think they were very encouraging about pursuing a professional career that could be really impactful, but also really cognitively stimulating as well.
That makes sense. So you did have a few role models around you who, you know, were in that field, which I'm sure influenced you. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your studies and did you kind of find, you know, a path specifically, a specialty maybe that interested you right away? Or was it kind of general interest in, you know, going to med school and then finding your path from there?
Well, the funny thing is that when it comes to medical school, you have to be a bit of a keener these days to get in. It's a little bit of a tough process. So I was one of those folks who was really quite focused on that long-term career path, even as early as high school, and was really thoughtful about going into the sciences, doing well in undergrad, and eventually hoping to be able to get a spot in medical school from there. And really open to different specialties. A lot of what I wanted to do was help people. It sounds a bit basic, but that's really what it is. I see a big vocation, a calling element to going into the field of medicine.
Yeah.
And was really excited to see what my path to impact could best look like once I hopefully was able to train in that area.
Oh, I think I just lost sound for you somehow.
Oh, did it?
Oh, you're back.
Oh, it's back. Oh.
Yeah, it kind of cut in your last word, but we should be okay. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your studies. Where did you go to med school? And tell me what that experience was like. And also, you know, I think I'd be curious to get your input nowadays. Or, you know, did you see as many women as men studying studying medicine, you know, during your program, for example?
Yes, I went to McMaster University for my medical studies. And what's very interesting about medicine is there's a very strong representation of women in the specialty. Mm. And especially across the training that you do, quite well represented across a lot of the different subspecialties, but more large amounts of women physicians in certain areas. So, for example, family medicine, perhaps psychiatry, pediatrics, which interestingly can actually be some of the not as highly remunerated specialties of medicine. So it's actually interesting as you go through your different rotations and get exposure to different specialties, you start to see patterns, interesting gender patterns of where you find different women leaders and where you can find really strong mentors and sponsors as well.
And well, that's actually really interesting because when we look at numbers, we still see that, you know, at higher levels in executive positions in the health sector, for example, women are still largely underrepresented. And then obviously, you know, jobs at the bottom of the food chain tend to be more occupied by women in health in general. So it's interesting to see how this, you know, how there's a pattern when it comes to specialties as well. So tell me how you chose your specialty and where did that lead you post studies?
Yeah, I had a bit of an open mindset around specialties, but something that really struck me the further along in my studies that I got was this idea of patient care versus population health. Sort of the balcony and the dance floor analogy of you're seeing patients day to day, you're on the dance floor, you look left, you look right, you see other couples dancing. And eventually you walk up that staircase and go to the balcony and you have an entire view of the ballroom floor. And all of a sudden you can see concentric circles going very well. You can see some couples bumping into each other a little bit, and you start to see patterns of systemness and patterns of that sort of population strategy working or not working incredibly well. And something about that really struck me and made me want to go into a broader specialty area. So I went into family medicine because of the incredible flexibility and depth and breadth of what you could do there. You could reinvent yourself 5 years later and go from focused family practice to working in an emergency room setting or working in obstetrics or working in sports medicine over time. So I love that idea of constant learning, but also that idea of learning about and contributing to different parts of the system. But ultimately ended up really pursuing additional work on the healthcare management side because I was really passionate about that population health level impact and more of the strategic work that we could do, but wasn't always as emphasized in our medical school training.
And what, so in terms of choosing what you were going to do post studies, how did that finding influence, you know, your preference for where you would be working?
Sorry, where I'd be working in terms of.
Post studies, kind of your first job in the medical field.
Well, my first job out of the medical field was a balance of a bit of clinical work, but I actually ended up taking a role at McKinsey and Company as a management consultant, working part-time clinically on holidays and weekends to give up my skills. But the majority of my time actually being more in the business world. And with McKinsey and Company, it was one of the most phenomenal experiences of my life to have what one of my mentor calls it as being a leadership boot camp of sorts, where you really get to cut your teeth on very unique business problems, strategy opportunities, ways to learn from incredible leaders, both within and outside of the health sector. And I continue to be very appreciative of that experience, but ultimately really wanted to bring that experience and that learning back to the healthcare sector as well.
Which you did. So interestingly enough, it's you found, you know, this position that seems to merge your two fields of interest. So now working for Cleveland Clinic in Canada, did that was that opportunity something that you know, kind of research applied for yourself? Did or did it show up kind of organically in terms of them coming to you?
So a little bit different than either of those scenarios, actually. I remember being really interested in getting more to this intersection of business and health. And, you know, within Canada, there aren't necessarily a ton of opportunities to do that. And so I started having, to your point, organic conversations within the business community, specifically with healthcare leaders. And I would really have open conversations and just ask, you know, Can you tell me a bit more about some interesting things that you're working on? What is your team doing? And the more that I learned, the more I would get excited about different impact opportunities. And one of the most compelling ones was actually a discussion with Mike Kessel, who is the CEO of Cleveland Clinic in Canada, about some early work they were doing advising executives in the corporate sector on health, on population health strategies. And I thought, oh my goodness, this sounds incredible. This sounds exactly like what I'm trying to do, blend the clinical and the corporate. And when I asked a little bit more detail, it was really quite early stage. They hadn't really built up an infrastructure. It was very opportunistic. And so I had put forward the idea of, well, if I leave my management consulting role to build a business within a business here at Cleveland Clinic Canada, will you create a job that does not exist? And so they did. And then I left and haven't really looked back after about 5 years.
Well, that's really nice when it does work out, which it did very successfully in your case. So tell me a little bit about your current role, your global head of advisory services for Cleveland Clinic Canada. So what does that entail specifically, understanding that they created this new role, especially for you?
Yeah, well, we've assembled a team, really outstanding team of physicians, specialists, business strategists who work with some of the largest companies in Canada, in the United States, all to strengthen corporate health-based strategy. It's also about reducing organizational risk, improving employee health performance and safety. And this is grounded on this idea that more than ever, companies have to protect their employees' health and the overall health of their organization. I think COVID was a very obvious but large use case, and in some settings, a bit of a wake-up call for some leaders and some companies on just how important this is. And the landscape has never been more complex for companies, and even more so for global enterprises. We often hear about competing interests that have to be addressed by employers, right? Employees who want to know their health and safety are priority, customers expecting that plans are in place to ensure a seamless consumer experience and that retail environments are healthy and safe. We have investors who want to ensure sound and responsible investments are made to make sure that key risks are being managed well. And so ultimately, my work and the work that we lead at Cleveland Clinic Canada is really about building healthier communities for us all and supporting the corporate community and executives in particular to make that happen.
And I mean, that's such important work. And this is, these are topics that we've brought up on the show and in our work at the Brand is Female in various ways. And obviously there is a concern, especially when we talk about gender equity in the workplace with women's specific needs. And I know that in your case, you've become, quite of a vocal defender for women's health in the context of workplace, just workplace policies in general. So, where did that interest come from for you, and how is it manifesting in your work today?
I think it's really about becoming a voice for women's issues, amongst which, we see women's health. But as a general idea, my inspiration comes from witnessing a lot of the unique challenges that women face in the workforce and also in their personal lives. Early in my career, I saw women in medicine ahead of my tenure who sacrificed a lot, sometimes including relationships, families, all while trying to balance and advance their personal and career trajectories. And so this shaped my own personal and professional choices, really influenced, me making decisions to create a supportive long-term career environment for myself where I could work hard but prioritize finding a life partner to share my experiences with, continually investing in the strength of that relationship and our family. And one of the longest run studies on human happiness actually has come out of Harvard showing that good relationships keep us healthier and happier.
Yeah, I've read that.
People with more social connections show lower rates of diabetes, arthritis, cognitive decline, other chronic conditions. And I take that idea and that type of data to heart. And then ultimately, seeing the impact that these types of unique issues have for women has really galvanized me to work to change the inequity that women face. And so, as we both know, women earn about 87 cents on the dollar earned by men. On average, when it comes to physicians, male family physicians earn 30% more. Mm-hmm. Male specialists earn 40% more than their female counterparts. And we know that inequity in health impacts not only female physicians, right, but also women at large. Mm-hmm. And only 3% of studies look at questions specific to women's health. So even when it comes to health-based solutions to support women, mm-hmm. we're a little bit behind the ball on that, just in terms of even research dollars and studies that have been done over the last few decades.
Yeah, that's always kind of mind-boggling for me when I look at how underserved women are in medical research across, you know, all topics and fields. We're starting to see that change, but it seems like it's happening very slowly. Glad that, you know, you are paying attention, and obviously Cleveland Clinic as well. Can you share some insights just based on, you know, research that you've had access to, the work that you do, the work that Cleveland does in general? You've written a number of articles about these topics as well. I'm interested in, you know, any insights and advice that kind of allow us in general to better support women in the workplace. And this is something we've tackled as well. We had a study come out last year around gender equity in the workplace, and you know, mental health was obviously a leading concern, and with women facing specific challenges around you know, just changes that come naturally from perimenopause and menopause. We've had a report come out on the motherhood penalty. So there's very specific experiences around women having kids and how preparing for mat leave in the workplace can have can impact, you know, our experience in the workplace in various ways before, during, and after mat leave. But I would love to know what are top insights and advice from your point of view.
Yeah, it's we've been discussing women in the workplace for a long time in areas like equal pay, glass ceilings, pension benefits, but we haven't been focusing on women's health as much until recently. And I think it's one of the most underutilized and untapped opportunities right now to address women equity and the workplace. You know, if we could solve that piece, substantial benefits for company and women would be unlocked. And so when we think about women and the many health challenges that they face, that can hinder retention, performance, advancement in the workplace. And some of the most impactful challenges might include, exactly as you already mentioned, menopause, chronic conditions like endometriosis, even mental health conditions mm-hmm. that are specific to women, like postpartum depression. And unfortunately, these types of women's health concerns just have not really had their day in the sun yet to be adequately addressed in the employer space. And that's across what we term the three M's. Mm-hmm. And what we mean by the three M's is menstruation, maternity, and menopause being three key themes on how you can adequately support women across their life cycle and across their career stages. And we know that as women seek relief from added stress, a lot consider downshifting their careers, sometimes leaving the workforce altogether. Mm-hmm. And this is what really puts companies at risk of losing decades worth of progress when it comes to equity. All of this being kind of rooted in health. And based on our work and our research, we see that addressing these types of challenges, it requires comprehensive support systems, right? Flexible work arrangements, increased awareness and education around greater accommodations, workplace culture. We see organizations that need to implement better policies over time to support women, especially during stages like menopause. And again, that's educational and resource piece to help create a more supportive environment can really go quite far. And that can include things like promoting mentorship, encouraging open dialogues about gender-specific issues around health so that women have the resources that they need and opportunities to thrive. But it doesn't always have to be complicated or costly. Sometimes it's as simple as having access to a fan in someone's office, being flexible with scheduling demands around parenting. So the good news is we're already starting to see improvements in things like maternity leave, fertility benefits, and some early conversation starters around menopause support. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll see even more progress to come.
Are you ready to be inspired and connected? I'm really excited to share that we have officially launched the Brand is Female Conversation Series. Come and join us for a monthly conference that's changing the game in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. Engage with fellow women thought leaders, innovators, and visionaries. Get ready for insightful discussions and powerful networking opportunities presented by TD Women in Enterprise. Visit our website, go to the events section, and secure your spot today. I can't wait to meet you in person. Well, and I think just the fact that we're having more conversations finally around these issues, you've referred to the 3Ms, for example, is a step in the right direction. But you're right in pointing out that there's still a lot that needs to be done. And, you know, when we surveyed women, that was very much the feedback that we received. A lot of our experience is being disregarded completely or discarded completely when it comes to the workplace. So I'd love to know in your case, because, you know, you come at this with kind of the management lens as well as the medical lens. How are ways that, you know, you're kind of helping advance a conversation within your own workplace and hopefully implementing some, you know, some measures that better support women at work when it comes to Cleveland specifically?
Yeah, I mean, for all of the issues that women are facing when it comes to health in the workplace, really, we do need to give women the time, the space, understanding, meaningful support, and also embed all of that into the workplace culture. So I think understanding the issues facing your individual workforce is a great place to start. Mm-hmm. So an example could be based on the average age of your workforce, maybe menopause is a more prominent or a less common challenge, right? If you're a management consulting firm and your average age is maybe much lower than it might be at a retail bank, that might really skew what types of supports you want to look to and prioritize first. Mm-hmm. And then starting that conversation to bring in experts to educate, answer questions, create understanding, that all helps to reduce stigma. Like, we can't expect people to know it all. Mm-hmm. Menopause is a great example. It's a hot topic, but it's not new. It just more recently became more broadly spoken about. And we know that things like perimenopausal symptoms can start up to 10 years before a woman officially enters menopause. And so if we do the math and think about many women having children later in life, they're often getting some of these symptoms while they're still trying to advance their careers, caring for kids, potentially also caring for aging parents. Mm-hmm. And this can have a substantial impact on the well-being of women in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So exploring policies and benefits that your company offers and aligning them with the needs of the female workforce can be really critical. And a story that really has always stuck with me has been a female leader who shared a really challenging experience of hers when she was having a miscarriage right before a big presentation. And she didn't feel comfortable disclosing what was happening.
Mm, wow.
But she asked a male colleague, you know, I'm sorry, I'm having an issue. I do need to step away. Can you please cover the presentation for me? And that colleague covered. But the female leader said that colleague then made assumptions as to why coverage was needed in the absence of information and alluded to questions around her level of preparation for the meeting.
Wow.
And it's a perfect example of this concept called covering that happens in the workplace. Yes, related to gender, you know, also sexual orientation, also ethnicity, but how changing culture and conversation can really unlock these types of more visible issues to create understanding and inclusivity in the workplace.
100%. It's interesting because we're just right now running a survey about peer stigma in the workplace. So results started coming in. And this is one of the areas where right away we can see that answers, you know, we're asking the question, for individuals who menstruate, are you comfortable sharing that you are on your period, you know, in the workplace? And if you are, in fact, experiencing or having to take time off because you are, you know, having kind of complications related to your period, no matter what they are you comfortable sharing with colleagues, you know, why this is? And we're getting some qualitative feedback that is very similar with women saying, well, I just say I'm not feeling well, but I am not comfortable sharing that I am in fact on my period and have severe pain. And maybe, you know, there's
a complication related to being on my period. And it, there's still such stigma even in talking about something as basic and as normal as, you know, individuals having their period, which, you know, for half the population happens once a month and up to a certain age, obviously. So when it comes to something like, I can't even imagine, but, you know, a miscarriage or menopause, I think the stigma is even more prominent. I know that you're also very passionate about making sure that, you know, employers, allies, anyone in the workplace who is interacting with women, whether they're in a decision-making role or more in an ally role, can help advance, you know, the conversation and bring about positive change. What would be your advice for these individuals who know they want to do something but are not sure where to start to help move the needle?
My advice is to actively listen, educate oneself on gender issues, and use platforms to advocate for change. We all have a platform, whether big or small, to make our voices heard. And whether that's through LinkedIn, in your own community, or at the dinner table, we can all be allies and support policies that promote equality and challenge discriminatory practices, and also mentor and sponsor women to help them to advance in their careers. Mm-hmm. You can volunteer with organizations that support women or women's health specifically. You know, get curious and ask questions at your next town hall and share your own experiences. A great example is we've had male executives on town halls related to menopause talk about some of the conversations that they're having at home with their spouse, with family members, right? By virtue of having strong relationships with women in our lives, it doesn't matter what gender identity you might have yourself, there are going to be different touch points where this becomes impactful for you and for those who you love and those in your life. And so I think that that is even motivation more so to really get engaged and think about how this impacts your own personal broader sphere, even beyond becoming a broad ally.
Mm-hmm. That is so important and well said. And I think representation, making sure that women are well represented at, you know, higher echelons and decision-making positions as well, helps, you know, move the needle more rapidly because they have a vested interest in making these changes happen. So why do you feel it's so important? And you've talked too about how even during your studies in med school, you know, you saw that women were kind of going to a certain specialties. And we know that numbers show that, you know, women are not necessarily the larger group when it comes to leadership positions in the medical field. Why do you feel it's so important to have women be reflected in positions of leadership, including at the board level, I would add?
Absolutely. I love that you added the board level piece. And I think there's still a lot more work to be done there. But women leaving the workplace or being underrepresented, that has a substantial impact on the performance of companies and our growth as society, economic drivers, right? Corporate performance. When women are well represented at the exec level, profits, share performance can climb up to double digits, even 50%, you know, cited by some sources. Mm-hmm. And yet under 6% of the world's largest businesses are run by women. So we obviously have a lot of work to do today. I'm lucky to be part of a senior leadership team at Cleveland Clinic in Canada, which comprises over 70% women. And that is unusual and inspiring, I think.
Yeah, it really is.
And even to places like, or areas like talent acquisition, innovation, company culture, that is all touched by gender diversity. So 76% of people consider gender diversity as being an important factor when they decide on a job. Mm. Companies with more women are more likely to introduce radical innovations into the market. Mm-hmm. And we also know that senior level women are more likely than senior level men to embrace employee friendly policies and programs, mm-hmm. or, you know, champion gender diversity and invest in people development. So all really positive things when we have diversity in the workplace that really represents diversity in our society.
Mm. Absolutely. going back to the healthcare sector and where we hope to see more women be, you know, represented in leadership positions as well. But what are some things that you'd like to see change? And I think there's, you know, we, especially in Canada, love to, I think it's true anywhere in the world, but we have a lot of critics and you know, there's negative feedback around certain aspects of how healthcare is managed and including access to healthcare for all individuals in our country. But what are some things that you'd like to see change in the future?
I think from a gender lens, you know, my hope is that women are empowered to be their own advocates and inspired to help seed a new generation of allies, as well as a new generation of women leaders in any industry, but in particular in healthcare. I want to see us inspire those empowered to boost funding for women's health, which, to your point, if there are more women empowered in these roles, that will help to add hopefully additional voices to that conversation around research funding dollars. And, you know, to directly support cultivating the next generation of women healthcare leaders, I think there's a lot of weight that needs to be put behind mentorship, but also more than mentorship, sponsorship of the next generation of women leaders in healthcare. And I think that that would be a huge boon to us all if we were able to achieve gains in the coming years.
Absolutely. And I like to end these conversations by getting advice and having my guests share advice with our listeners. So if you had to speak to, you know, women who are looking to make a difference when it comes to women's health in the workplace, maybe they are in the medical profession, maybe they're in a, you know, connected industry, what would be your advice?
I think beyond some of what we already talked about around the active listening, educating yourself on these gender issues and using your platform to advocate for change, I think taking some small wins and realizing that small steps will lead to big impacts over time can be very powerful. But also where, you know, top-down influence can be achieved and you can get executive level buy-in for more programmatic change, that can also be incredibly important and powerful and further help us to move the needle even more quickly. And knowing with your workplace, with your industry, which scenario might make the most sense for you to take a role in can be helpful just so that you make sure that any effort that you put in is as able to create value as possible.
Absolutely. That's all good advice. Well, Talia, thank you so much for making time to chat today. I'm excited to see how you're helping shape the future of, you know, women's health and being an advocate to help bring impactful change. So congrats for your work. And I look forward to seeing what new innovations we're able to witness when it comes to improving the quality of life for women at work and seeing more of us represented in leadership, as you've brought up. So thank you again.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.